A movie came out in 1993 called My Life. It was a particular favorite for me. And it told a story of a high-rolling real estate mogul who found out that he was dying of incurable cancer while his wife was pregnant with his firstborn child. With only months to live, he decided to make a video of his life so his child could be introduced to his dad after he was born. And as he walked around with his video cam, interviewing friend after friend after friend, asking them to give his son some snippet, some overview or some perspective about his dad, he was surprised to discover that pretty much everyone thought that he was incredibly shallow, self-centered, and blind to that reality. And as the story progresses, he discovers a deeper life in the time he has left. He has to cultivate relationships that go well below the surface. He has to forgive and deal with the deep disappointments in his life. And he has to be honest with himself and those around him. The story is brutal. Very few of us want to discover that we are living a shallow life. That we only care about things that don't matter, that we have not invested well. Yet many of us are living shallow. Think about it for a moment. Are you living shallow? Living on the surface of things and are either too afraid or don't know how to cultivate a life of genuine depth. Author Stephen Covey said it, I think, well. He said, "Have you been climbing the ladder of success only to find it's propped up against the wrong wall?" So today we're going to begin a series called Building a Deeper Life in a Shallow World. And this morning I want to begin by posing the question, the big question, if you will, why are we so shallow? We're going to take a look at that and the diagnosis, but at first we need to actually answer the question of why is it that we're shallow, the diagnosis stage. And so I want to ask that question, why are we so shallow? The Bible addresses this question frequently, but Jesus zeroes in on it in what's called a Sermon on the Mount in a poignant and probing way. Turn with me to Matthew chapter 6. Now, the high view of this chapter gets at why our world and our personal lives are so shallow. Jesus begins by talking about three religious disciplines most Jews practiced in his day, that is giving to the poor, prayer and fasting. He then calls us out on what we treasure and how that shapes us, concluding with our fears and our self-reliance, and then moving on to challenging us to put first things first. He deals with the roots of shallow living by addressing 1, our religion, 2, our values, 3, our fears, and 4, our priorities. That these are what drive us. And if we're misaligned in these, they will always yield a shallow life. So I want to say that again. He deals with our religion, our values, our fears, and our priorities. And these are what drive us. And if misaligned, will always yield a shallow life. So right out of the gate, Jesus calls us out on what our religion is all about. Verse 1 of chapter 6, he says this, "Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward with your Father in heaven." Then he dissects how most people do their religion, in quotes. In verse 2, he says, "So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the street corners to be honored by others. I tell you the truth," he says, "they have received their reward in full." And then in verse 5, "And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you," he says, "they have received their reward in full." And then on to verse 16, he says, "When you fast, not if you fast, but when you fast, do not look somber like the hypocrites do, for they love to disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full." When our religion and our expressions of it are all about us and what we get in the public sphere, we're living shallow. And the reward is short-lived and shallow as well. So I want to ask you, be honest. Have you ever been in church worshiping and thought, I think so-and-so saw that, and maybe they'll think well of me? Come on, be honest. All of us at some point have cared more about what others think of us than anything else, our religion included. And I say religion in the most positive sense here. We want people to see us acting righteously. We want to be well thought of. We want others to somehow make us valuable. But that leaves us living up here in the baby pool of people's praise and not in the deeper end of care, the care of what God thinks of us. So the first thing in your bulletin and your bulletin handout is the first point that we're seeing here is living outward without developing an inner life with God keeps us living shallow. So let me be more specific. If Sunday is the only real investment that you're making in your spiritual life, you will stay shallow. It's Sunday Christianity. Are you a Sunday Christian? A once-a-week believer? And is that what God wants? And is this what the good life is all about? When you go to the doctor, they'll ask, where does it hurt? But before a cure can be offered, an honest diagnosis must be given. Where are you with Jesus? Do you trust that the life that he offers you is actually better than the shallow life you're choosing? Think for a moment. This gets at the heart of things. Living to get the attention of others, to have them reflect back to us that we are valuable, to get their affirmation, will keep us shallow. It always will. Then Jesus challenges our values. He knows that we will live into, I say that in quotes, live into whatever we value. Our schedules, checkbooks reflect what we value. And so he says in verse 19 of chapter 6, he says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He says, look at your life. What you treasure is evidenced by how you spend your money and your time. What gets most of your attention and interest. What you turn to when you're down or looking for comfort. That says where your heart is. Dang. He says that your heart follows your treasure. Not the other way around. He says your heart follows your treasure. Remember, your heart is your control center, your will, where your decisions are made. Your decisions reflect what you treasure. And so he says that treasuring the wrong things will keep us shallow. That's the second point. Treasuring the wrong things keeps us living shallow. We can even treasure good things that are not ultimate things, and they will leave us shallow, unfulfilled, and somehow empty. We do this all the time. What do you treasure? Think for a moment. What do you value? It might be Mr. or Miss Right, romance, husband or wife, children. Our children are very much our center of attention. Our career, our dream, our car, our gun. No gun owner just has one gun. They always have guns. That might be golf, might be fishing, might be sports, musical instruments, music, concerts, and the feeling that you have at the concerts, travel, that look, being slim, buff, the makeup, the house, the backyard, the image, the toys, the motorcycles, the motocross. The shopping, the sex, the entertainment, the rush of the extreme experience and the high of that. Or it might be your substance, your alcohol, your weed, your drugs, that feeling. It could be food. I'm a foodie, so food is a big deal. Most of these things are not bad in themselves. But we live shallow when these temporary things become ultimate things. Living for these things keeps us shallow. Now, the central character in the movie that I mentioned before, My Life, he had it all. He had invested. Everyone does. He just invested in all kinds of things that didn't really matter. He had the house, the car, the trophy wife, the success, but in reality, he was shallow and bankrupt, and it was put right into his face. So survey your life right now. The question, what are you living for? Think, what are you living for? If you survey the landscape of what you're chasing, have you made good things into ultimate things? Be honest. These will keep us shallow. Jesus said that we have a choice in this, that we can invest in what lasts, in what's truly important, or chase all kinds of other things that won't fill us. It was interesting. I was sitting in my backyard spending time with Jesus the other day, and I observe all kinds of things in nature. And a special treat for me is always when my hummingbirds come around. I call them the hummies. And there was a hummingbird that came in, and we have strings of Edison lights in our backyard like we do here in the sanctuary. And it was fully daylight, and this hummingbird that I call the century, he owns the tree that sits right in front of where I sit. He was pecking at an Edison bulb around, and he kept pecking at one side and then pecking at the other side and pecking at this side and that side, and he just continued at it, thinking that somehow he could get nectar or bugs or whatever that he was trying to eat, some sort of nourishment from that Edison bulb. But the Edison bulb could never provide the nourishment that he was actually looking for. Never could, never will. But I think the hummy is very much like us, that we will peck at something thinking that somehow it will give us some value. It will give us some ultimate sense of purpose and meaning. It will give us love. It will give us the things that we think that we're searching for, but it's by nature cannot give us those things. That's what chasing temporary things that instead of ultimate things does to us. It keeps us living shallow. Next, Jesus looks us straight in the eyes and he addresses our fear and perhaps I'd say our self-preservation or protection. In verse 25, he says, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, and or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing?" What we worry about gets our attention. Think for a moment. What we worry about gets our attention. So what makes you anxious? What do you worry about? He said that when we stew in our own juices, of our own worry, that we are living like the people without God. We're living like the pagans do, he says. That we can easily live in anxiety and fear of getting hurt, of losing something, our jobs, our kids, our stuff, our safety, our career, our car, our relationships, our sense of value, fear of rejection and abandonment, being nothing to no one. We're afraid of that. Years ago, I was talking to God about someone that I deeply disagreed with. And the Lord asked me in the midst of a conversation with him, in my mind's eye, he said, "Do you think that she has anything to bring to the table on this matter?" And I, without even thinking, I said coldly and glibly, "Not a thing." And his reply was, "That's what she thinks about herself also. Oh, that she feels without value, like she doesn't matter." Fear keeps us living in self-protection and preservation. We will armor up ourselves, our bruises, our wounds, and we will keep people from our pain. And the pain may go deep, but it will always keep us living shallow. Hear this, please. The truth is that you cannot live deeply and protect yourself at the same time. Let me say that again. You cannot live deeply and protect yourself at the same time. And so the third point that we see in this is that fear, worry, self-reliance, and self-protection keep us living shallow. And so I want to ask you, are you anxious? Perhaps what are you anxious about? I can relate. As one who's struggled with, for much of my adult life, I've struggled with anxiety. I know what it's like to have a crippling anxiety attack. I know how inside you just seize up, that you're frozen. It kept me from deep and satisfying relationships with others. I would simply freeze inside. I would withdraw within myself. I would try to distract myself with something else just to cope with it. How about you? Jesus said, a large number of the antidote for this is to trust and rest in God's care for you. That's how he addresses this. He says, God cares for you. You are deeply cared for by God. Sometimes his love becomes real to us when we're singing in worship. We may run across a line in a song and tears begin to well up and we begin to melt. We've just experienced the love of God who truly loves you and truly knows you and who has reached in and touched us on the inside. You have been touched by God himself. Fear, worry, self-reliance, and self-preservation or protection all leave us in the baby pool of life. They keep us from real deep joy. They keep us from deep moments of clarity where God shows us our place in his large and expansive universe and yet how we matter to him all at the same time and his purposes for our life. He shows us and says to us that we matter. What makes you anxious? What are you afraid of? What makes you angry? All these things keep us in the shallows. And then the last thing that Jesus concludes with is he addresses our priority with clarifying truth. He says, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has troubles of its own. Now, I like the Message paraphrase and how Eugene Peterson puts it. It clarifies it. He says this in the same verses. He says, steep your life in God reality, God initiative, God provisions. Don't worry about missing out. You'll find all your everyday human concerns will be met. Now, give your full attention, your entire attention to what God is doing right now. And don't get worked up about what may or may not happen tomorrow. God will help you deal with whatever hard things come up when the time comes. And Jesus challenges us. He challenges our priorities with this. He says, something will always occupy the top spot, what we seek most. And he said that the real antidote for anxiety and self-protection, for what we treasure and where our heart is, for what builds spiritual substance on the inside, is choosing to seek the right thing. If you try to be not to be anxious, you'll end up focusing on what you're anxious about more. If you try to treasure only really good things, we will still end up in the shallows, chasing but not finding. If we try to get our religion right by doing and saying all the right things, we will still be left empty. It is, and this is the last point, the failure to seek put first things first is what keeps us in the shallows. Well, Bob, you know, just tell me what to fix and I'll go after that. Maybe that's what you're thinking. But it is not something that you fix. It is a relationship you cultivate. It's not something you fix. It's a relationship you cultivate. I think C.S. Lewis brings this home so well. He says, I came to suspect that I was perceiving a universal law. The woman who makes a dog the center of her life loses, in the end, not only her human usefulness and dignity, but even the proper pleasure of dog keeping. The man who makes alcohol his chief good loses not only his job, but his palate and all the power of enjoying the earlier and perhaps only pleasurable levels of intoxication. It is a glorious thing to feel for a moment or two that the whole meaning of the universe is summed up in one woman. Glorious so long as other duties and pleasures keep tearing you away from her. But clear the decks and so arrange your life that you will have nothing to do but contemplate her and what happens. Of course, this law has been discovered before, and it will stand rediscovery. It may be stated as follows. Every preference of a small good to a great, or partial good to a total good, involves the loss of the small or partial good for what makes the for which the sacrifice is made. Here, he clarifies this a little bit more. He says, apparently the world is made this way, that you can't get second things by putting them first. You can get second things only by putting first things first. Now, later on in his same letter, he said this, put first things first and we get second things thrown in. Put second things first and we lose both the first and the second things. One more time. Put first things first and we get second things thrown in. Put second things first and we lose both first and second things. Jesus said, put me first. Do it. And everything else will fall in place. Most of us are shallow, honestly. And Jesus' diagnosis is not all-inclusive of everything in this chapter, but he gets at the heart of the matter. He said that living outward without developing our inner life with God keeps us living shallow. It's shallow religion, and there's certainly a lot of that. He said that treasuring the wrong things keeps us shallow as well, that our values, and we tend to value shallow things. Thirdly, he said that fear, worry, self-reliance, and self-protection keep us living shallow because fear keeps us shallow. And then lastly, failure to put first things first keeps us living shallow as well, that is, dealing with our priorities. So, the question is, are you living shallow? Perhaps you could ask a trusted friend or spouse, be careful now, what might they say about you in answer to this question? But please, be gentle. If you ask and you enter into this, be gentle. This question has initiated a journey in the man at the top of the story in my life. It initiated a journey for him. It started with him understanding that he's shallow and materialistic and it's all style, no substance. But as he faced his mortality, the lights began to come on and he began to go deep. He began to ask the right questions. Will you go on this journey with me? I'm going to ask you, will you go on this journey into the depths of spiritual maturity, into the depths of Jesus and his love? Will you go on this journey with me to explore what a deeper life, the life that Jesus bought for you on the cross is, and what that might look like and how you and I might move into it together? Will you go on this journey with him, please? Let's pray.